And we're going. So, hi everybody and welcome. I'm Susan Tatum, founder of Conversion Copywriting, where we mix content marketing with LinkedIn to generate leads and thought leadership for technology companies. And you are listening in to the latest in a series of discussions with experts in a variety of areas of content and social media marketing. Before we get started, just a couple of notes. First, we have a lot of content to cover today, and I'm going to ask you to hold your questions until the end, and we'll do our very best to get to them. If we run out of time, I will give you a way to get in touch with us so we can address your questions. The second thing is that we had some difficulties a few weeks back with the audio cutting out. Sounds like we're not muted. Let's see. See what I can do about that. Okay. Sorry about that. Anyway, I'm still having trouble with the audio, but we had trouble with the audio cutting completely out. If that happens, just hang in there and we'll be back. And we'll be publishing a recording of this conversation very soon, and I will send everyone a link to it. So let's get started. Today, I am very happy to be talking with Mike Weir, who is the Global Head of Technology Industry Development at LinkedIn. And Mike has a lot to share about how tech marketers can be a part of all of the IT buying decision-making that is going on now on LinkedIn. Mike, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today.
Absolutely. Looking forward to the conversation.
Okay, so just in case there are any listeners who aren't familiar with you yet, can you take a minute or two and just tell us about your background and what you do at LinkedIn?
Sure. So prior to LinkedIn, I was actually a technology marketer myself. I was in marketing management for a couple of different technology companies within North America. I made the move over to LinkedIn approximately 2 years ago to lead the business unit focused on helping support technology companies in leveraging LinkedIn for marketing. So I thought this was an amazing opportunity to take the practical experience I had being on the client side, from working within my business to help us grow, and looking at emerging channels like LinkedIn as one of those great places that had an amazing amount of data, a growing audience, and a unique opportunity to ultimately start getting into conversations with our target audience versus the traditional approaches we had been using of more push marketing to try to have them engage with emails and direct mails and catalogs and things of that nature. But in my role now, it's all about working directly with clients within technology companies on how to best leverage LinkedIn for their specific marketing campaigns, whether it's around brand awareness, demand generation, community development, advocacy programs, and more.
So you mentioned data, and it seems to me that you have some data, and by you I mean LinkedIn, that pretty clearly indicates, at least in my mind, it establishes LinkedIn as a social channel that tech marketers really can't ignore any longer for the ones that are. And I know a lot of people on the call are already aware of that, but just in case we have some folks that are new to LinkedIn or who have to report to non-believers within their companies, can you highlight some of that data and just tell us what you've learned and continue to learn about how IT buyers are using LinkedIn?
Absolutely. So when you look at LinkedIn at the largest level, we've hit what we consider a very much a critical mass. You're talking about over 259 million members globally. We're now at a point where one-third of the world's white-collar workers are LinkedIn, and we're actually growing at one of the fastest rates the company has ever grown at, with around 3 members joining every second, which then translates into about 200,000 new members every 4 to 5 days. So this growth has been fueled by a lot of the advantages that technology and IT decision makers have been using it for. So the value that's being derived around the ability to access a very wide network the ability to interface with their peers to build their own personal network. But increasingly, as we see page views continue to increase by 40, 50, 60% plus every single quarter, it's because of the amount of insights that people are deriving within the platform today. And that's really about the content and the networks sharing this content amongst their peers that's driving these repeat visitors back to us. And when you look at the IT committee and their use of LinkedIn, they're actually on the forefront of this. So why was I hired into LinkedIn? Because the folks that were driving technology decisions for their business were some of the earliest adopters of our platform and are some of the folks that use social media the most to inform their IT decision making. It's actually grown so significantly in the last 2 years. And when we first did the research 2 years ago, our baseline showed that social media was good for a brand to be discovered, to help drive awareness. But now in the data that came back from ComScore, we're actually seeing that every single stage in the buying process has social media ingrained in that decision-making process. So whether IT decision makers are scoping a project, planning a project, selecting or implementing, they are going back to social media to be able to validate what they're hearing and seeing outside of the social media landscape, whether it's in direct marketing, live events, virtual events, in-person meetings in some regards with people from the organization that's trying to sell to them. They're using social to validate these ideas. And they're also using social just to discover brand new content and discuss amongst their peers. And so that's some of the really interesting things that are happening on the platform right now. So I don't know if you want me to talk to the five other very big implications that we did see from this research.
Yeah, sure. I do want to, if you would go into a little bit about the IT committee, because I know that that's very well defined in some of your other presentations and the report that you put out. But in case any of the people listening aren't familiar with exactly what you're referring to, let's define that for them.
Absolutely. So we define the IT committee as every type of person and function within the organization that has a very significant influence over that company's technology purchasing. And what we did see in the data is that this group of individuals has been changing drastically. And I know most of us know that it's not just IT or the CIO that's the primary audience that we need to build a relationship with. But now we're actually seeing very significant shifts that say in the U.S., 43% of the folks that are on the IT committee sit outside of IT. And so that means there's a lot of different functions from sales and marketing and finance to operations and facilities that are now sitting at the table and directly impacting what type of IT project gets prioritized. And then for the projects that are prioritized, what is the outcome we're looking for from the project? How are we scoping this? What vendors are we going to consider? Who are the two or three vendors we're actually going to bring in to talk to about their particular solution? So the IT committee is now just all the people that have influence, and our big emphasis and one of the big findings here is that it can't just be IT, because if you're only talking to IT, you're missing a lot of people that are influencing who they're going to buy from.
Okay, good. Okay, so what were the other findings that should be emphasized then?
So the first one was just that we now have to talk to more than just the IT functions within our marketing efforts. The second was relating to how we truly build relationships with these folks, and that means that in a social world, it's about content that's extremely authentic, that's valuable, and that's timely. And all of these seem pretty straightforward and inherent because people are starting to engage in social more and more, and they want companies that act more like their network. that have a point of view, that have a very personable approach to them, that are all about helping them learn and educate themselves versus just talking about themselves. And so this idea of changing our content strategy was a huge finding that came out of here. The third one was starting to earn leads via social in addition to just buying leads. I think this is one in the technology world especially that is very interesting. I'm going to pause for a second. Susan, are you still there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. I apologize. There's some background noise. So the idea of earning leads is something that, you know, I spend a considerable amount of time talking to you know, CMOs at the technology companies about, because it's a very different mindset. And it's really based on what our end users are looking for from us. You know, in the traditional sense, we have revenue numbers to hit every single quarter, and marketing has the delivery that they're expected within us. You know, so we want to produce a lot of high quality, large volume of leads to help our sales force get to the revenue goal. But increasingly, because people now control their own education process, they're going to social because that's where the conversation is open, and they are able to get to insights faster because of this openness. And so we can't apply the same traditional approach of putting content out there, gating everything, and causing them to not have access to valuable information. And so what we saw is that there is absolutely a willingness in the right situations for LinkedIn members to give their information up because they actually see a huge value in the thought leadership being provided to them, or they see a huge value in the specific content that was just shared to them, so they're actively raising their hands and saying, yes, I'd like to talk to you about this. And so creating more of a balance of being in the conversations and finding those people that are ready to talk to you versus just buying leads.
I think that one of the things that we're finding with our clients is that you can get people to sign up for, as you said, you know, high value content. But what we're finding is that you have to show them more and more of that content ahead of time so that they know that it's not just marketing content, that it's really, it's going to be a value to them doing their jobs. And if you give them a little bit of this and a little bit of that, then they will come back and sign up to get the full document or the full webinar or the full whatever it is. But it certainly gets more challenging, which is good, because I think it makes us be better at our game too.
Yeah, I would completely agree. I think that's the same thing that we've seen with a lot of the clients we work with. It's, you know, there's a time and a place to put the gates up, and typically we like to have a lot of the thought leadership content out there available for folks to learn about what's possible in the industry, what technology exists or new approaches exist to solve business problems. And they're naturally gravitating back to the organizations that are helping them rethink the way they should be doing their jobs or the way their company could operate and create a competitive advantage.
So you mentioned in one of your presentations at how buyers are finding, at some stages, they're finding information on LinkedIn that they didn't even know they were looking for.
Mm-hmm.
I think I heard you say that. How is that showing up? Is that in like a LinkedIn Today feed, or how do they run across that if they're not looking for it?
Yeah, I think there's two ways. The primary way that people are discovering new insights is via what we've just rebranded as Pulse. So traditionally it was called the LinkedIn Today newsfeed. And you know, when you log into LinkedIn, whether it's on the mobile application, tablet, or the desktop, the primary thing people use is the feed. And that feed is now a ton of content flowing through there from your network. And one of the things that we've spent within our product organization a lot of time working on is, you know, the algorithms that drive relevancy of the content that we're going to serve up to you from LinkedIn Today, now named Pulse. And I think it's that area that, you know, me personally as a new person joining LinkedIn, that I was immediately kind of like, whoa, I had no idea the power of this. Because it is, it's different from other news aggregation sources because at the heart of it is your own personal first party data. And so we use, you know, who Mike Weir is as a professional, you know, who I'm connected to and what they're sharing, what content they're engaging with, what, you know, what other attributes of my skill set and my previous employers and groups that I'm part of, all the factor into what are the ideal news stories that we should be surfacing for Mike. And in that way, it's every single day I'm being pushed information within my newsfeed that I should know about. And I think the, you know, what you're referring to, Susan, was when I was talking about how it's helping me do my job better, because before I used to have to go to, you know, 10, 12 different news sources, and I would have to look through all the headlines, and I would try to actively find what are the trends, and now it's actually served me in the feed today via, again, LinkedIn today. And that is, that's a huge value add. When you think about why the IT committee uses social, two of the very important things are efficiency and relevance. They want a very efficient experience because they're extremely busy. And with efficiency, they want high relevance. And the algorithm within the feed is pushing you content that other professionals in the world who have the same type of role that I do, who have the same experiences that I do, who are following, you know, the same type of content channels that I am, you know, this is what they're engaging with, what they're commenting on and sharing. So, Mike, you better take a look at this. And so every day it's surfacing new insights for me. And the other one is just groups. And I think that's a, you know, a huge place that people are starting to utilize more and more to leverage the network and get in front of, you know, in my case, other technology marketers to talk about challenges that we're all facing on a daily basis and work together on what are some of the best possible solutions so that it's, you know, kind of not just up to me anymore to figure it out for myself. I can use the network within that group to help me solve problems faster.
Okay. We skipped over, you know, I want to talk at some point about the different ways that LinkedIn provides for tech marketers to find and engage with this IT buying committee. Do you think it's better to go into that now or to continue talking about what you found and learned about how the IT buyers are acting on LinkedIn and what they're looking for?
I think it'd be great if we just quickly finish off the how they're engaging, because that directly flows into, you know, how we're working with technology marketers to engage across the platform, because they're very much complementary. You know, our goal in doing this research was we wanted to understand what was going on in the broader marketplace. Then we really want to understand, you know, was that translating into the LinkedIn environment and what value and things were LinkedIn members looking for, so that at the end of the day, we can use these rich insights to help our technology clients to better align with the IT committee members that they care about. Because it's, to us, extremely critical to know, you know, what type of content and topics and where specifically on the platform are these folks networking and learning, so that companies can insert their brand and insert their points of view and content into those exact same places.
Right.
So, you know, the two remaining big findings that we saw were that, you know, this idea of a short list of vendors is continuing to get smaller and smaller. So the, you know, the IT committee is now keeping the process to themselves longer than they ever have before. You know, we've seen metrics from Gartner and others that say it's, you know, 60 to 80% of the decision-making process is done before they're willing to talk to a vendor. Well, within our data, that was also very startling, is that not only are they holding this education process to themselves for longer, but when they do open the process up to technology companies that have solutions for that problem, they're now only looking to talk to between 3 and 4 technology companies, which, you know, still seems like a lot, but when you think about it, you know, the data that I've seen in the past is upwards of 6 to 8 companies used to make that shortlist and be considered and be given a chance to come in and present.
Right.
So now so much control is in their hands that if we're not out in the forums that they're in where they're engaging with content, talking to peers, educating themselves, then we have a very low likelihood to be on that short list of providers.
And so would it be fair to say, sorry.
Go for it.
Okay. Would it be fair to say that these IT buyers are willing to connect with and have a conversation with vendors on LinkedIn prior to that short list and prior to when they would open themselves up to talking with a salesperson?
Mm-hmm. That's actually the strong preference. Again, you know, within the research, we saw that there's been huge increases, so much so that it's actually telling us before they were okay and thought it was fine and expected that, you know, a technology company would be on social. And it's actually gotten to a point now when you're talking about, you know, 76% of the IT committee in the U.S. is like ready to have a conversation with a vendor on social, that now it's kind of mandatory that if you're not present, it's actually a detriment to your brand and folks look at you as if you're not helping them to solve their issues. So that's definitely something we saw here, is that, you know, there is an expectation that the technology companies are, you know, they're in these conversations, they're adding value to it and helping people solve their business issues on a daily basis. So related to, you know, the importance of building relationships and being in these conversations so that you can be considered to make the shortlist, tactically, we've seen such a big emphasis and importance on making that shortlist that we're now advocating to our clients to start tracking as a KPI whether or not they're making it onto the vendor shortlist or the leads that they're generating. And so there's, you know, yet another thing that we can track to see, you know, what's the likelihood of success with the leads and the lead sources that we're using to be able to help our sales team be more effective in closing deals. And if we're seeing that, you know, we're not making the shortlist, folks are now starting to go back and understand, you know, in what geographies, for what industries, at what company sizes are we not, you know, making the shortlist where we may have a brand awareness or a reputation issue or something else that's, you know, preventing us from being, you know, effective in winning deals. And so that's one metric that we're starting, as I mentioned, to advocate, you know, folks consider whether or not you can track it, because it's shown to be extremely critical, because folks that do not make the shortlist, there's only 7% of the time that somebody from outside of the shortlist is actually the one that the company will buy from. And so that clearly shows if we're not making that shortlist, then we are not going to have a high likelihood of success.
I'm kind of surprised it's even that high, 7%.
Yeah, and it varies. There's, you know, across the globe, it can be, you know, a very small, even smaller percentage of folks that would kind of swoop in at the last minute and be able to win deals away from the three companies that business had been talking to.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you were talking about the buyers are really expecting vendors to communicate with them and get involved with them on social media. But yet I know I saw in that report that there was a list of reasons why they hesitated to connect. So when they didn't connect, it seemed like marketing was the cause of most of the reasons they weren't connecting. I think the number one was, if I recall, they don't want to be sent a bunch of marketing information.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Would my assumption that by marketing information, meaning they don't want it, they don't want to go back to the me, and here's my product, and feel like that's being rammed down their throats too soon. They're still looking for information that's going to help them generally solve their problems.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. When you look at what's the common theme for the five reasons that, you know, the IT committee won't connect with a vendor on social, it is, it all does translate back to, you know, I think the number five reason says it really well, which is, you know, they talk too much about themselves.
Right.
So when you think about it, it's like, hey, you're sending me too much material. I don't think you're going to give me any credible information. This isn't relevant to my job. You're talking too much about yourself. You're not a thought leader in the category. These are the five most commonly selected reasons why they won't connect with a vendor. It all comes back to, in social, it's about helping the other person solve their problem. You know, they're there for a very specific reason, and if we are very generic and we are kind of just cramming our solution down their throat, then they have all the power to tune us out, stop following us, to leave the group discussion, to disregard the comments that we're making within the group or the content that we're sharing to them within the newsfeed. So that power is something we have to really understand and think about as we're crafting our content in the future.
Yeah, I can see that. And in talking about content, I know you said that, or your report said that you found that there are differences in the types of content that would appeal to buyers based on whether they're senior decision makers or they're junior decision makers.
Yeah, when you look at, you know, the depth of the content, it's interesting because there's two levels to the data that we saw come back to us and that we actually see on LinkedIn regularly is, you know, the first simple layer is that, you know, within their function, you know, if I'm a CXO, I just have a different focus for my job than somebody who's a individual contributor. And that means from a very holistic level, there are a lot of subjects outside of technology that I care about that, frankly, I look to companies that can provide that thought leadership to me. Whether it directly relates to their products or not, I find huge value in companies that will help me do my job better. And so there was one layer of the data that came back, and it said, you know, senior decision makers were very engaged with, you know, content about broadly what's happening within the technology industry, about leadership, about mentorship, about, you know, really running highly effective teams, that, you know, they were seeking that level of broad content so that they can do their job better. And then as that translated into the actual technology world itself, you know, they were just looking for a higher level of information about the specific subjects, because the types, the form factors that they were looking for within the IT committee, it didn't really change. You know, everybody wants IT industry news or best practices or, you know, trial downloads and things of that nature. What changed was really the focus of those pieces. And so what was very revealing to me is when you look at a senior IT person, like a CIO, versus the, you know, IT manager or a network admin, somebody at that level, the CIO wants the best practice during the scoping and planning stage that talks about what's the best practice to deliver the business result, whereas the IT manager or the network admin or so forth would want a best practice about how to implement that particular technology within their type of environment. And so you would look at it on one, it's kind of considered more of what is the, you know, what's the end result that a CIO or a CXO would be able to take to, you know, the leadership committee and say, hey, this is absolutely, you know, why we should be prioritizing this particular project over another one, because we have a problem with A and it solves it. Whereas the folks that are, you know, much more on the front lines and building the recommendation, they need to be more in the weeds about, you know, whether or not this thing is going to be interoperable and how it would function within their particular corporate environment and their corporate culture and how to actually implement the technology and get people using it.
So with the junior IT buyers or buying decision makers, would those tend to be more in the IT department, or are they some of those located out in the other business functions as well?
They are out in the other business functions as well. What was equally interesting about the IT committee is that, you know, we saw 43% work outside of IT, and 50% are individual contributors or manager-level folks within the organization. And what we actually saw is that, you know, this trend that started, you know, a decade or more ago where the CIO was the ultimate decision maker, they owned at one point in time all of the IT budget, and they would delegate. And the IT manager, the team would build the recommendation or even build the idea, and then they would ultimately sell it up to the CIO, who would ask a lot of questions and make sure that they were comfortable and that they approved and agreed with the idea or the specific recommendation on what they should be buying or considering. We're seeing that same exact discipline happen as marketing and sales and operations now has a seat at the table on the IT committee. That at first it started with, you know, the CMO or the head of sales or the head of operations saying, you know what, you know, I'm new to this. I want our team to be seen as highly credible. I need this to be effective for us. So I'm going to be very much involved. And now it's actually to a point where they've established themselves on the committee, and now they're starting to delegate to their, you know, marketing director or a specific subject matter expert, you know, within their CRM team when they're looking at some marketing automation software. And so that same trickle-down effect is happening outside of IT today.
Interesting. Okay, so should we talk now about how the vendors can engage and attract IT buyers?
Sure.
What are all the different ways?
There's way too many to cover in 25 minutes, but you know, from an approach perspective, what we really strive to do is, you know, first and foremost, understand what you guys are trying to accomplish within your campaigns to be able to align the appropriate tactics. And when we look at aligning the tactics, it comes down to where are the members engaging, and where are the members engaging in our platform that you have to be able to build a relationship and influence their decision making. And so that, based on our research, comes back in, you know, four really critical areas that everybody should be thinking about how they're approaching, you know, what tactics are available to you. So the first one and the second one are very much related. It's within the LinkedIn feed. And so that is the number one place that people on the IT committee are engaging with content today. And that feed translates itself into the number two, which is mobile. Increasingly, the IT committee is consuming content on their mobile devices because it's ubiquitous. You know, this content in the feed is available to you on your Android device, on your iPhone, on your tablet, and as you're going from, you know, the 10th meeting of the day to the 12th meeting of the day or the 11th meeting of the day, you are spending 5 minutes in the hallway checking what's going through the feed, catching up on new articles that are being served to you. You're saving them to read later. You're opening them up and leaving them in your browser. You're emailing them to yourself and colleagues. That engagement is really critical. So when we look at, you know, the approach that we take for the feed and getting into the mobile devices, you know, the primary tactic today at LinkedIn is sponsored updates. The new product that we launched back in July, it has been, you know, going exceptionally well. It's our version of native advertising, and the sponsored updates present themselves on in the feed across both desktop, tablet, and the smartphones. So it's a huge way to get in front of a very wide audience of folks that you want to discover your brand, to learn and read about your thought leadership and products and solutions. The third big area is engaging within groups. And so, Susan, I believe you were at the Content Marketing World session where we talked a little bit about communities, and then maybe even the Tech Connect session about communities as well. And this is very much an increasing focus of the IT committee. You know, this idea of leveraging a very broad group of people that are experts and qualify, whether they are practitioners today, like other security managers like themselves, or they're industry experts from think tanks or analyst firms like Gartner and IDC and other places. Groups are increasingly a place that the IT committee is going to validate their thoughts and to validate the marketing materials and sales conversations that they're having outside of the social environment. And then the final place is actually just the one-to-one networking capable of InMail. And so, when you look at how, from a groups and an InMail perspective, tactically can marketers engage with the IT committee, the first one for groups is seeding subject matter experts in to different groups that are of interest to you. If you're so inclined, you can work with LinkedIn to build a group of your own and use that as a thought leadership platform for you to drive a conversation about a specific technology area, about a specific concept, so that you're building a community of folks that are discussing and debating technology and the direction it can go in, or the very specific potential of your particular technology, to create an active group that is ultimately, if we're doing it right, creating advocates for you, who are also sharing your content and your thought leadership from that group with their peers within their own company, or more broadly within their network across LinkedIn. And then the final piece on the InMail is just leveraging sponsored InMail to be able to deliver one-to-one messages to the IT committee members that you want to deliver maybe a high-impact piece of content, invite to a live or virtual event, or just introduce a new product or service offering and ask them for some feedback. Increasingly folks are using personalized sponsored emails where it's the head of one of their practices, like the virtualization, to reach out to folks and introduce a new offering they have and provide an offer to do a services engagement to see the capability of this new team directly. So I would say those four areas of our platform are extremely critical to think about. How can I get into the feed and in turn into the mobile environment to get content in front of the right people? How can I dig into groups to have really solid, granular conversations with folks that are in the throes of discussing and debating what they should be doing with the technology today? And then finally, when I have really compelling call to actions, how can I reach out to them on a one-to-one basis via sponsored InMail to get a direct engagement going with them?
Well, we use the groups, creating custom groups, very, very heavily. I agree with you. It's a wonderful way to build a community and build relationships, without there being any feeling of pressure on it. And quite frankly, we find it, a good way to drive traffic back to a landing page or a website, or, even to lead to a one-on-one conversation with somebody. We've noticed, I guess like everybody else has, that with all of these new people that are coming into LinkedIn and the popularity of groups, there's an increasing amount of spam that's in there. And we manage a number of groups for our clients, and it's a real chore to keep a lot of that out. And I think part of the problem, quite honestly, I think is caused by these social media gurus, quote unquote, who are advising their clients to auto post, just to take blog articles and post them everywhere. So from my perspective, that's a big mistake. What are you seeing or hearing from LinkedIn members about groups and, how to keep them valuable?
Yeah, I think you definitely just hit on one of the biggest things that we talk to folks about when they're considering doing a group or community strategy, and it's moderation. Like, that is one of the most critical things that you can do, and it is not easy. I think you're on the front lines with this one as well, and you can see that it is not easy because there are a lot of folks that do not approach social in the correct way. I don't know why they think it's going to be effective, but joining a group and just throwing random comments in, or throwing out offers for their services at a discounted rate. It's like, I don't know why people think that just throwing a pebble into the ocean is going to be effective, but we're hoping to work with a lot of clients via partners, potentially like yourself, that provide amazing moderation services so that we can very much help the group thrive. And to do that, the heavy lifting is, we have to be keeping track of who's joining the group. We have to be actively moderating what comments and content are being posted so that we can very quickly get rid of stuff that's going into the group conversation that does not belong there.
Right.
The two other aspects that we spend a lot of time on is content. So I'll start with that one. The idea of starting a group and just thinking the group itself is going to be self-sustaining used to be common, and now many people have woken up to this by having, unfortunately, failed groups in the past. And the idea of having a very solid content strategy that allows you to be continuously bringing new content and, via that content, new ideas to the group to spark conversations, or to be able to actually add value to existing conversations that are happening. That's the second pillar. So it's moderation, then content, that we're talking to clients about how to build a very effective group strategy. And the third piece is group members. And it seems somewhat trivial to think about it, but we have absolutely seen that, especially in an IT context, there is going to be waning, it's like ebbs and flows within interest of the group itself, because people are very, very active and engaged as they're being brought into this new technology decision, as they're scoping, as they're planning. They're very, very active and have tons of questions, and they're looking to get a lot of feedback from folks. But then once they've actually done that and they've gone through the implementation, they may be like, all right, cool, I've got to focus on making sure this implementation is going really well, and they'll back off. So the idea of continuously interjecting new blood into a group by proactively recruiting new group members is that third pillar that's helping people to really improve their group strategy, so that you're constantly finding new people that are being exposed to the technology for the first time, or you're finding people that are actively thinking about or trying to decide on what they're going to buy.
Right, right. And it is a job to keep all of that going, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So the first two things that you mentioned, which is basically being sure the sponsored links and sponsored updates and being sure that you show up within the LinkedIn feed. Now, when you say feed, I assume you're talking about the LinkedIn Today or the Pulse thing that you mentioned. It's what I see when I go to when I log on to LinkedIn, and it's just showing me what other people are saying that I know or might be interested in.
Yep, absolutely. When you're on the desktop product, it's that stream of updates, whether it's from LinkedIn Today or it's other network connections of yours sharing updates. That's all what we call the LinkedIn feed.
Okay. And how would I, as a marketer, how would I measure the results that I'm getting from whatever I'm investing in these sponsored updates?
So we have marketers that are using sponsored updates for many different objectives. Some of them are looking at it purely from getting brand awareness. Some are looking at it for demand generation. Some are looking at it for extremely specific demand generation aspects like recruiting event attendees. And so across each of those types of campaigns, folks have different KPIs for it. In the brand awareness category, many folks are looking at sponsored updates to say, all right, how many people did I reach? What was my engagement rate? What was my share rate? So that I can determine how many people am I impacting? How many people am I potentially changing opinions about? If you do a large enough campaign, where it's a huge sample size, we'll do brand studies with clients to actually go and talk to the LinkedIn members that were exposed to the sponsored updates versus people that were not exposed to the updates to see if the brand metrics improved by being engaged with their sponsored update content. On the demand generation and other aspects of demand gen, like event recruitment and stuff like that, it's much more easy to translate because, we can directly see how many people have engaged, how much referral traffic did we generate, who became leads, how qualified were they, and, eventually in time, did any of these convert into new customers for you?
Okay, yeah. That's similar to what we do with the groups and the in-mail sort of stuff. All right, so let's say you're a technology vendor and you've been sort of on LinkedIn but not really, you're just kind of doing brand maintenance and posting some status updates and maybe joined a few groups or whatever, and you really want to start using LinkedIn as a valid marketing channel.
Mm-hmm.
How would you go about doing that? And let's assume that this is not a large company. You don't have a major budget and a lot of resources to put into this. How would you approach LinkedIn? What would you do for second and third?
Sure. I mean, if I look at it, depending again what objective you're trying to drive at, I think there are some very easy ways to start, just dipping your toe in the water and seeing the capabilities of LinkedIn and what type of results you can get. When you look at something like sponsored updates, because of the amount of engagement we see with content within the feed, as well as within the mobile device, I think that's a great place to start testing a relationship with LinkedIn. And within sponsored updates, we do have a self-serve product. So whether whether you have a budget of $500 or $500,000, you would actually be able to go in and use the self-serve product to be able to go into the auction model and say, okay, I want to start, distributing these two content pieces to IT professionals at a Director Plus in the U.S. only, and you can do a CPM or a CPC bid to say how much you're willing to pay for that audience, and then based on where you rank within the auction itself, that content will start getting distributed out into the feed for them. And I think that's a nice, easy way to kind of just start testing the waters and seeing, is your content resonating? Do people engage with it? Are people ending up over at your corporate website and becoming leads for you or not? So I think that's a great place to start for a lot of folks. If you're more interested in just very broad brand awareness, then you can also use sponsored updates, but just use a different form of content. And I would then also consider, again, for smaller budgets, starting with the LinkedIn Ads product, again, which is self-service and allows you to basically buy with a credit card and start doing some ads across LinkedIn to your target audience to again test whether or not, you know, your messaging is getting engagement. And if you're, you know, if you're cost conscious and those components are working exceptionally well for you, then it would absolutely be something to reach out to us so that we can actually have a sales representative talk to you about what you're trying to accomplish and what the next logical products would be to start adding into your campaign or potentially replacing those initial investments as you would look to scale into a $15,000 or a $25,000 campaign spend.
The people that are using or the vendors that are using LinkedIn ads, do they tend to use them to drive people, say, to a landing page like a pay-per-click would be on Google, say?
A lot of folks are using that to generate web traffic for themselves.
Okay. What about company pages, Mike? Our approach to company pages so far has been you should have them because it looks funny if you don't, and if you have bad ones, it can be detrimental. But in terms of lead generation or driving traffic, mm-hmm. We just haven't seen the value of it yet. What am I doing wrong?
Sure. You know, when I look at a company page, I think the most important thing is just kind of how we frame the value of it. And when you have a company page, it's the value primarily is going to be coming from your ability to distribute content from that company page into the feed. So you're looking at the ability to do targeted status updates to the LinkedIn members who are following your company page. And then from those targeted status updates, you can then sponsor the update to reach a broader audience of people that are not following you. So company page as a destination, you know, the intention wasn't necessarily to, you know, replicate a corporate website with all the functionality and information that would be on your corporate website. It was more so to create an opportunity for you to have an owned media presence, recruit followers, and begin communicating to that group of people that are very interested in your brand. And then with the introduction of sponsored updates, it's also to reach a broader audience of folks that may not have been exposed to your brand or just have not chosen to follow your brand with your thought leadership and amazing content to get them engaged and over to, you know, whatever destination you may deem fit, whether it's a group on LinkedIn or a microsite or your corporate website. So I would definitely think about it in the terms of it is your gateway to creating a group of followers and communicating to the broader LinkedIn community.
Okay. Well, that's a different way of looking at it from what we've been doing, for sure. I had one question that's a little bit off the wall, but, you know, there are some products and services that technology marketers would be selling that I would assume would be 100% IT based, so there wouldn't be any involvement from other business units. And if it's something that's used by and for the IT department, I mean, maybe the CFO is involved, but there would certainly be some software type products that don't involve other business units. Does that make sense to you? Do you see? We've got a client that does predictive analytics specifically for IT, mm-hmm. and in that case, it really is IT people that they're selling to. And I agree that that's not the norm.
Yep.
But in that case. I'll just say that we're finding over the past, I'm going to call it 9 months, that people that are in the IT function are opening up much more to communicating on LinkedIn. than they have been in the past, i.e. it's easier to get them to join groups and participate in the groups. And does that follow what you're finding in your research?
So you found that it's easier to get them into groups and participating in groups?
Yeah, and I, so there, you know, in the past, you know, if we go back, like 18 months or something, and you said to me, I have a product that is strictly an IT market. There's no, it doesn't affect sales, it doesn't affect operations, it doesn't affect anything else. I would not have put LinkedIn at, you know, near the top of the list of places where I would try to reach that market. My sense of it is that that is changing, and it is a valid place if you're to just reach IT people, if that's what you need to do. I mean, we're seeing that with a couple of clients now. And so is that an anomaly that we're seeing, or are you seeing the same thing across the board, that the IT types are getting more involved too?
No, we're absolutely seeing the same thing. I think it's actually more interesting to me that you guys haven't seen them as engaged in the past. The IT professionals are one of the early adopters of the LinkedIn platform. When you look at technology and the technology industry, it is the most followed topic on LinkedIn, as based on people following the technology channel, which is, you know, influencers, LinkedIn influencers that are associated with the technology industry and content from LinkedIn today that's about the technology industry. You know, it
right.
is certainly an area that has the widest adoption rate across the platform, which is awesome for all of us because that means, you know, these folks are seeing the value bought in mass on the platform. The specific point about groups, though, is I think the value of the conversation has continued to get better and better over time. So I could definitely see when you apply it just to a group environment, we've always seen very good groups out there, but I think the sheer quantity of really high-quality groups that are focused on, you know, super niche topics or very broadly around things like cloud computing or IT security, the volume and value of those groups has gotten way better, in my personal opinion, in the last 2 years. And some of that is because, you know, more people that are experts and bought into it, that particular industry and are like, extremely knowledgeable about it, are now, you know, wanting and seeing the value in building groups and leading groups.
Right.
But then also, you know, kind of our approach and everybody's approach to managing these groups has gotten better so that the groups are delivering value and that in turn is attracting more and more people into them.
Yeah, we used to advise clients that if we're building a group with IT people that it's a slower build, it takes a while, but that seems to have really changed a lot over, like I said, the last 9 months or so. That they're coming on in. If you got a good group, like you said, if you've got a good group, then they want to be a part of it. Well, once again, I've talked past the time allotted. Is there anything that I should have asked you, Mike, that I didn't ask?
No, I think we actually covered quite a bit of ground. I would love to answer any questions from folks that were on the bridge and we did not get to. So, Susan, please let me know what questions you do collect, and I'll try to email answers to everything possible.
I will. And what if somebody wants to get directly in touch with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Best way is to reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm on there every single day.
Okay. All right. Well, Mike, thank you so much. And everybody else, thanks for joining us. And like I said, we'll have a recording of this posted shortly, and I will I'll send it out to everybody. So thanks again, and have a good day.
Bye,
Mike.
Thank you. Have a good day.